In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Well, I'm kind of excited today about our two saints. They just fit perfectly together. So the feast for today, St. John of Matha, is our feast for today in the universal, or the calendar in the 1962. Josephine Bakita is the saint for today in the Novus Ordo calendar. I think she was 1993. I don't know if she's on the universal calendar, but it's the Novus Ordo saint. But as I mentioned, they're just great friends in heaven, and their stories are perfect together. So John of Matha, a 12th century priest and founder of the Order of the Most Holy Trinity, or the Trinitarians. So this is an order dedicated to the redemption of slaves. Similar to Peter Nolasco and Raymond of Peñafort, they founded the Mercedarians. John of Matha, along with Felix of Valois, founded the Trinitarians, dedicated to redeeming captives, both of them. So he was a 12th century, and he was born on June 23rd, which is a feast of St. John the Baptist. So he was given, named after St. John, hence his name. He was noble, born to nobility, had a good education, fencing, writing, dancing, all the other usual noble things. And he'd get a considerable sum of money, like a stipend from his parents, and he would give it away to the poor. He just wasn't interested. He was ordained a priest at the age of 32 in December, and he didn't celebrate his first Mass until June. So that's why, actually, when a priest is ordained, they learn that you make the priest, actually, that's the one time in the traditional order a priest concelebrates, is when he's ordained, to make sure that he actually does it instead of withholding for months and months out of scruples. So when he celebrated his first Mass, that 6 months later in June, he had a vision of a Catholic Christian faithful held in chains by a Muslim. And this affected him deeply. And as we know, at this time in the 12th century, the Muslim raiders are going up and down the Mediterranean, taking captives, burning and killing and so on. And if you were a nobleman, your family would redeem you, or a merchant. You could be redeemed. But if you were poor, who was going to buy you back? You weren't worth anything. You were going to be a slave your whole life. So John of Matha was greatly affected by this and knew that it's not money that is important, or wealth or titles, but your soul, right? And if you those enslaved persons, Catholics, it would go much better for them if they apostatized and accepted Islam. So that was a great, great danger. So he wonders what to do with this, and he actually goes and lives as a hermit. He withdraws into the woods. He finds Felix of Valois, who was there living as a hermit, and the two of them were there for 5 years together. Felix of Valois had been there for decades, almost his whole life. He'd been living as a hermit there. And when there, St. John of Matha received his answer. He was in the woods with St. Felix, and he saw a stag, which is not surprising, very common. But in between the antlers of the stag is a cross, a blue and, I think it was blue and red, cross. And he understood this, that would be the symbol of the order that he was supposed to found. That's a similar story with St. Hubert. St. Hubert in the woods had a vision of a stag with a cross between its antlers. So this is not an uncommon thing in Europe, I guess, for saints. So he sees this vision, and he tells it to St. Felix and says, okay, I want to go to Rome and found this order, and I want to leave basically today, right now. It's the middle of winter, on foot, right, going from France, the woods of France, into across the Alps, right, into Rome. And St. Felix of Valois, an old man, 70 years old, having lived his whole life practically in the woods, this is where he was, this is what he knew, understands this is the will of God, and so he goes with him. Right, aged old man taking this difficult journey, willing to leave behind everything. So they both set out for Rome. They were given permission from Innocent III. They called their order the Trinitarians. And St. John of Matha went down to southern Spain and began to rescue captives. This is Spain is still partially controlled, greatly controlled by the Muslims. And he had to do a lot of fundraising to buy back these slaves. And so he prayed to our Blessed Mother and received quite a bit of funds, which he always used to redeem the captives. And he gave her the title, Our Lady of Good Remedy. title we should be familiar with today. 800 years ago, right? It was given. She was given that title by Saint John of Matha. So what a contribution, right? An 800-year title, very, very effective for to go to Our Lady, right? When funds are needed for a good cause. So St. John continued this good work until he died in the year 1213 at the age of 53, and his helper, St. Felix of Valois, had died the previous year at 95. So we just never know how long our life will be or how it will last, how it will begin or how it will end. And so that would be a good transition into St. Josephine Baqueta, neither of which was the name she was given at birth because she doesn't remember. She didn't remember what name she had at birth. She was born in 1869, I think, in Sudan. She lived with a good family, loving parents. She was one of seven children. She says she was very happy and didn't even know what suffering was until she was kidnapped by Muslim slave traders at the age of 8. And her older sister had been kidnapped 1 year earlier. And now here she herself was. So over 600 years later, after St. John of Matha instituted this order to redeem slaves from the Muslims are still at it, right? Enslaving people and so on for 600 years. And it's been, ever since they've been instituted as a false satanic religion in the year 700, for over 1,000 years, Islam, a satanic religion of Islam has been a scourge on the world, and it needs to be destroyed, as I say all the time and will continue to say. Islam is not a religion of peace. So Josephine Baqueta, or whatever her name was at the time, was kidnapped by these Muslim slave traders, and they actually gave her the name Baqueta. It means lucky in their language. Oh, you're the lucky one. So a bit of irony sarcasm on their part, but it would turn out to be quite ironic. She was sold and resold in markets over the next 12 years, forgetting her name and just calling herself Baqueta. Her original masters, they were Muslims. One of them treated her well, but she offended one of his sons, who gave her such a severe beating, she spent a month in bed. She was sold again and treated even worse. She says of one of her slave owners, "During all the years I stayed in this one house, I do not recall a single day that passed without some wound being inflicted. When the lash from the whip began to heal, other blows would pour down upon me." And who was it that was mistreating her thus? It was her own countrymen. She was still in Sudan. It was the Sudanese. It was the Muslims. It was the pagans. It wasn't like white oppression of black persons. It was black people mistreating and enslaving other black people. Race has nothing to do with it. Skin color has nothing to do with it. Who was it that sold slaves to the traders who brought them to America and Britain and everywhere else? It was Africans. Right? Who was it that was slaughtering 100,000 native South Americans in Mexico and Central America? It was the Aztecs, right? It was Indians enslaving Indians. Right? That's always how it works. It's just that, these Europeans come along, they have more money, let's sell it to them. So St. Josephine Baqueta is being cruelly mistreated by her own countrymen, Muslims, until finally she is sold to an Italian ambassador, a diplomat. And she was very happy to be with this European family who treated her well. There was one other occasion, too, when she was a slave family that mistreated her. They scarred her. They took a bowl of flour, a bowl of salt, and a razor blade. They traced out designs in flour, deeply cut it with a razor blade, and then poured salt in it so it wouldn't heal. And she had 114 intricate patterns tattooed on her body. That's not 114 gashes, that's 114 patterns with, you know, who knows how many. So that was the kind of torture that she was subjected to, the mutilation and so on, until finally she's bought by this Italian ambassador who brings her back to Italy. He was going to leave her in Sudan, and she begged him to take her with them. So he did, he took her back, and then he gave her away. He gave her to another family to be their nanny, essentially. And this family, again, continues to treat her well, and she's about 20 years old this time. She's been a slave for 12 years. And she ends up, as a nanny, she's got this little girl and Baqueta, and she goes and she stays with a convent of nuns for a time. The family was away. She stayed at this convent, and it was there where she heard about the Catholic faith for the first time. And it completely changed her perspective. And she says of this experience, "Those holy mothers instructed me with heroic patience and introduced me to that God who from childhood I had felt in my heart without knowing who he was. All right? God has put a knowledge of himself on every human heart. And this is why, again, let's go back to Romans chapter 1. The pagans have no excuse not to know the invisible God who is from the visible things which are. That is always the case. So she made the decision then she wanted to stay with the nuns, and then the Italian family returned, and they showed less than Christian charity because they wanted to keep her with the family. She was a good servant, a good nanny. They didn't want to let her go. So they appealed to the Italian courts, an Italian lawyer, while the novice mistress of the convent appealed to the Cardinal of Venice. That's where this convent was in Venice. So you have these two people fighting for her, right? This family that wants to keep her basically a slave, an indentured servant. And then the Catholic Church, these beautiful nuns who want to free her from slavery and have her join their community. So the cardinal ends up winning out over the lawyer, partly because his name was Giuseppe Sarto. Joseph Sarto? Yeah, it became Pius X. So she had a good artillery on her side. But the legal system in Italy, even the lawyer ruled against the family because he said slavery had never been recognized in Italy. And furthermore, the British, who were controlling Sudan at the time, had outlawed slavery in 1833, right, many years before Bikita was born. So even on the legal side, they said, no, you have no legal standing to this woman. She's a free woman. It's so irritating when you know history, you know what has gone on. Britain comes in, and yes, they occupy parts of south of Africa, and this is called like the colonization of Europe. You had the Dutch down there, you had the French, and all kinds of things. And what did they do? They brought European administration, they brought the legal system, they brought the courts, they outlawed slavery, they would outlaw things like this tattooing and scarring that the Sudanese and the Africans and the Muslims were doing to each other. They brought civilization. What do you hear about now? The oppression of the British, imperialism, all these kinds of things. Okay, you know, there's corruption, right? There's greed, there's all kinds of stuff, but there was also humanity, right? Because what did Europe bring to Africa? Christianity, right? Catholicism, really. And that is always going to improve mankind because it is God himself who wants to love mankind and ennoble our nature. That's what happened with the Portuguese and the Spanish when they went over to South America. Okay, you know what? You had some unscrupulous businessmen. They enslaved these Indians and made them work on the plantations, but they weren't cutting their hearts out and rolling their bodies down the ziggurats and stacking their skulls up by the hundreds of thousands. There's a progression of improvement. So you go from slaughtering each other, cutting out hearts, to enslavement, to the Franciscans saying, you can't do this, these people have human rights. The establishment of the human rights idea by the Salamancan school of Portugal, and that evolves into the Catholic charities and the understanding of the dignity of human nature we have today. And then what's happening is getting corrupted and perverted and misunderstood by the liberals, the Democrats, the progressives, just another arm of Satan. And now they're going back to paganism. And saying that we need to get away from the church and superstition and this oppression and institutional racism. And I tell you, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, everything, they're all headed back towards slavery and mutilation and all these other evils that we got away from. They don't know history. They don't even understand human nature. So that rant aside, thank you for your patience. Bakita becomes a nun, and this is the order here. It is the Canossian sisters. That was a small order founded about 100 years ago by Magdalene Canossa. And so she joins these order of nuns, and she stays there for the next 42 years. She was a cook, she was a sacristan, she was a doorkeeper. If anybody needed help, she would give it to them. And the people of the town absolutely loved her. They described her as kind, gentle. She had a very soothing voice, very good with the sick, the suffering, and the poor. And she was always smiling. The people in the town, when she was younger, called her the little black sister, and when she got older, they called her the black mother. And her last years were marked by a painful sickness. She spent in them in a wheelchair, but she always remained cheerful, and when she asked how her health was, she always replied the same. As the master desires, was her answer. In her last few hours, she drifted kind of in and out of the use of her mind, and she went back to her childhood as a slave. She would call out at one time, the chains are too tight, loosen them a little. But she received all the sacraments at her death, and she died on the Saturday of Our Lady. It was 8 February today in, oh, it was 19, it was like 19, 20 or 30 something, I think, is when she died. Maybe it was even later. But she died, her last words were, Our Lady, right? Having died on the feast of, the Saturday of Our Lady. Her cause in Italy was for canonization, was called for immediately, and she was declared a saint in 1993 by St. John Paul II. Absolutely beautiful life of St. Josephine Bakhita, right? And as, again, that name Bakhita was given her by the Muslim slave traders as sarcasm. It turned out to be ironic. She was the lucky one. In fact, she would say later in life, one of her students would ask her, what would you do? What would you do if you could meet your slave traders? And she said, without hesitation, if I were to meet those people who kidnapped and tortured me, I would kneel down and kiss their hands. For if these things had not happened, I would not have been a Christian and a religious today. Right? That is always the answer. We have nothing to complain about. Absolutely nothing. She was ripped away from her family at 8 years old, scarred, cut, beaten, mistreated, whipped, passed around, bought, and sold. I mean, what kind of a life would we expect from this person? What kind of a life would we expect from ourselves if it happened to me? We complain about these little things in our lives. This is why it's so important to know the lives of the saints. Look at what she did with her life and her sufferings. She completely turned it around. Right, and that is the imitation of Christ. What did he do? Right, when he was bought and sold for 30 pieces of silver, when he was tortured, right, when his hands and feet were nailed to the cross, right, he forgave others, and that is exactly what all of us are called to do. God bless you all. The Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen.